Welcome to the CineScare Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And with us, as always, is the super fan, Mr. Mark Muscati, and he...
Detective Mills.
I'm Detective Mills.
Well, okay, so audience, you can't see this. There's two things you can't see that I really wish you could see. For one, he spelled detective... Detective.
Oh, no! God.
So
it's then, not just pronunciation issues that he's got with the English language. He can't spell it either.
Right.
He says it like he spells it.
Well, actually, the audience doesn't know this, but we're on a thing. It's called Squadcast, and then we record and do our podcasts on here because I live in Burbank, Chicago. Mark lives in Chicago. Joe lives in Davenport, Iowa. Whoa, sorry. I just dropped a knife. and on our screens, you can type your name. Mine says Speak, motherfucker. And Joe's says John Doe.
John Doe.
And Mark's says Detective Mills. Now, what is a detective?
It's...
A very small detective? Like a tick?
Yeah, like a tick detective. Yeah.
Like my brain.
So the whole reason I am John Doe for the evening and Mark is Detective Mills is because tonight's movie is the 1995 classic Seven, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, this was Joe's choice, right?
Yes.
The Seven. Yeah. But I guess before we get to that, we can talk about, I mostly, cause one of the things that we're going to be doing tonight is not just talking about the movie Seven, but we're also going to be talking about, our ideas for a double feature that would include Seven. What movie would we pair with, Seven if we were doing a double feature? And I really had a tough time narrowing this down. I had some different criteria. So most of the extra movies that I watched had to do with this. So I don't know if I should talk about them, the ones that I'm not choosing now, or kind of talk about them when we get to that part, or what. But
let's talk about the other movies we've seen that have nothing to do with this.
Okay.
Just our casual viewing for the week.
All right. Well, I will start us off this week. I watched a couple things that didn't really have anything to do with the theme. One was a movie called They Look Like People, which is on Shudder, and it's very indie, you can tell they did not have a lot of money to put into this, but it's pretty interesting. It's about this guy who suspects that people are transforming into like shapeshifters, right? And so he goes to New York City to seek out a best friend who lives there and who's been doing pretty well there. He's kind of up and coming in the company he's at. And so he's doing fine. And so this guy decides to go there and stay with him for a little while because he's been seeing kind of like visions of people. And he's been seeing a therapist about it who believes he's got some maybe schizophrenic, psychotic traits or whatever that are causing him to see kind of distortions of people's faces that make him think that certain people might be possessed or you know, be some kind of shapeshifter or maybe an alien kind of thing. There's not a lot of description as to what he thinks is happening. All he knows is that there's something about certain people that isn't natural, right? And so it was a cool concept. I liked it. I think they were really short on money with this one, so there were a lot of scenes that just sort of it felt like they were stretching out the scene a bit because they didn't have a lot they could do, and so there were just a lot of filler scenes, I felt. And even as it wasn't, I don't think it's a very long movie. I think it's under 90 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. But it's not like it's difficult difficult to get through. It's kind of interesting. It winds up, I felt like the third act, the ending was pretty tense for the most part. Not great. I gave it 3 cuts. It's definitely worth checking out. You know, I like supporting an indie filmmaker and indie films like that. So, yeah, I kind of liked that. It wasn't bad. And then the other thing that wasn't really related to this that I watched was, oh, yeah, The Woman. It's a TV show on Netflix, a series called The Woman in the House Across the Street from the Girl in the Window. Did you guys watch this?
No, I didn't. I heard some people watch it, and they weren't too happy about it, so I stayed away.
I mean, from the title, it seems like it would be a spoof, you know, of those Lifetime movies where there's some guy who killed his wife and the woman across the street suspects him, kind of Rear Window-ish. And so it seems like with that title, because and there are, you know, and it's funny because there's a lot of movies out right now with really long titles for some reason, and some of them are on Netflix, but this one definitely seemed like it was supposed to be a, you know, just from that title, like it was going to be a comedy, but it's all played very straight. Like and then afterwards I read that they really were trying to make a spoof. It really was supposed to be a satire, and I just didn't see it. Everything was played very straight. There's very little humor in it. And, you know, if you're going for an Airplane or Scary Movie kind of spoof, you know, then the jokes really have to be telegraphed. Like, you got to know that it's something you're supposed to be laughing at, not just a play on a trope. It should be, like, broad, obvious that they're satirizing that genre, right? And this one really wasn't. It seemed very straight until the – and then all of a sudden, at the very end, it becomes – almost not, I would say, comical, but not in a like funny way, but just in a what is happening. Like the whole tone of the show shifts about halfway through the next to last episode, and then the last episode for sure. The whole tone sort of shifts, and it doesn't work. It just doesn't, like, you're like, I don't understand what's happening now. I felt like there were things happening in the last episode that I was like, oh, I even said to Michelle while we were watching, I was like, oh, this is going to turn out to be like a dream or something like that, because everybody's acting so weird that, it just doesn't seem real to me. And no, it was all real. It was such a bizarre show. And I can't say I hated it for the most part. I mean, after it was over, I was like, oh, my God, that was a huge waste of time. So I don't recommend it. Don't waste your time, because you will kind of get caught up in it a little bit. Each episode's only like a half hour. It's like one of those very easy little, you know, things to watch. It's not a difficult show to watch, and you kind of get into it. But then by the end, when you see how it winds up, I felt like I'd been taken for a ride. So, like, in the bad way. So it was not, I was definitely not worth your time. Unfortunately. Yeah.
How was Kristen Bell in it? How was her acting? Get it? How was Kristen Bell in it? Because I like her. That's the main actress, correct?
Right. Yeah, she's really good in it. And I, you know, I think a lot of all the actors were pretty much pretty good. But and she was good in it. But there's only so much you can do when where they take you at the end is just nothing, you know. It was just kind of ridiculous. So I guess that was really all I really watched that was not related to Seven or our double feature thing. So Joe, what about you?
I actually watched 5 little movies in the past couple of weeks. The first of which was from Shudder, a 2001 release of, well, it's 2001 is when it came out, but it just got on Shudder. It was Slapface, which is a story about a boy who is grieving with the loss of his mother, lives with his older brother, and he befriends a witch or monster, demon, lives in the woods. And sort of like a Harry and the Hendersons thing, but a lot scarier. And the whole movie is basically a anti-bullying message. It was okay. It was very middle of the road. I wasn't totally bored with it, but it also didn't do a whole lot for me. I wouldn't go raving about it, but it was a decent film. You know, I can't really go too much more into it without giving something away. But
what was it again?
Slapface.
Oh, Slapface. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's that game we were going to play with Mark later.
nice.
The next movie that I watched was, of course, Matt's recommendation. And as we all know, whenever Matt recommends something and says it's good, I always run to watch it. So I watched Advent Calendar.
I appreciate that, Joe. Yeah. I'm sure Mark did, too. I'm sure he's good.
Yeah, we can all chime in on this one. Don't be shy, Mark.
Yeah, I'm sure. We'll have all three. In fact, we should mark off it's enough probably time sort of, that all three of us can talk about it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's already CineScare certified.
Oh, yeah, definitely, for sure.
Do you want to say something, Mark?
No.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
Waiting for your turn. Just, okay.
Yeah, save his turn, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to go too far into it because Matt's raved about it so much. I'm sure all of our listeners have listened to it already too, or watched it. But, this girl who's a paraplegic, receives a advent calendar from a friend of hers. Of course, when I think advent calendar, I just think of something, you know, that you get from Swiss Colony that's made out of paper and has chocolate in it. This thing's like this mechanical wooden box thing that folds out on your desktop and has all these different doors with prizes and candies and whatnot in it. But as she starts eating the candies daily, things start happening and coming true and affecting her daily life. This was, all kidding aside, Mark, you really should watch this. It was a fantastic movie.
I'm gonna watch it.
And that was Shudder? Is that where that was, Matt?
Yeah, it's on Shudder. Okay. Yeah.
The next one I watched came out in 2019, and I'm a sucker for these things, but it was Countdown. It was on HBO Max. It's that movie about the high school kids that they find out there's an app that they can get on their phone that basically tells them when they're going to die. And all these kids start downloading it, and they're looking at it, and they're like, oh, I'm not going to die till I'm 93 years old, or I'm not going to die till I'm 17 years from now. And somebody gets it, like, oh, I'm going to die in 3 hours. And all of these things, again, start coming true. It goes a little off the rails with some of the choices of actors that they had in this. And when they go to consult wild and flying by the seat of his pants type of priest that they go for consultation on how to, you know, cure this and fix this. Those little tropes I was a little, you know, turned off by, but the movie's creepy. Like I said, I'm a sucker for those things. I realize they're just trying to keep up with the times, but it was to the point where I found out the app is actually real and decided not to download it. So, anyway, that was the 2019 thriller Countdown. I've got two more left. And then the next film that I watched was the 2021 release Antlers, which is a film about an isolated Oregon boy, or actually family, him and his younger brother and father that live out in the woods. And his father and brother acquire some sort of illness, I guess would be the safest way to put it without spoiling anything. I can tell you there is a antlered creature in the woods that has a very nasty disposition. Carrie Russell from Felicity fame is the lead in this film. I don't want to say I'm middle of the road on this one because I did enjoy it. The character design is fantastic. I thought the acting and the writing was very good. I wished there was a little bit more horror, a lot more gore, but I'd give it a solid watch. I would certainly recommend other people check it out. I have nothing really bad to say about it, but I'm not raving about it either.
Yeah, I was kind of middle of the road with this one. It wasn't, it didn't knock me out. I think I was just hoping for more, because when I saw the initial trailers for it, I was pretty excited about it. But
yeah,
but it wasn't bad. And I do agree that the creature design was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm literally the same way. Like, so what do we call that? Semi Cinescare certified?
I don't know that I would say it's
Cinescare mend. Meh?
Yeah. Cinescare meh.
Yeah.
Cinema.
But okay, the last one real quick that I watched is by far my least favorite movie of the year. It was absolutely terrible. I highly recommend nobody waste their time, despite what Netflix is trying to confuse you with. It was number 5 of the week. It's called The Privilege.
You were talking about that.
I think it's a German film. It was there's no subtitles. It's all overdubbed. The writing in this film is just abhorrent. You know, when you've got teenagers that are actually saying words like YOLO and, you know, let's have a lesbian in there that's got pink hair and she's all for women's rights. It's all these like archetypes that they're trying to throw. It's like if somebody never met a teenager but just heard what teenagers acted like, and let's write it like that. You know, very, very unrealistic, very canned. It's about a wealthy teen and his friends attending an elite private school, and they uncover a dark conspiracy while looking for looking into a series of strange events. It's basically a remake of The Faculty.
Oh, really? Huh.
It's extremely similar. Extremely. The movie starts out really good. Like the first 5 minutes, I felt like I was thrown into the end of a good horror movie.
And this is a movie, not a series.
Correct. Mm. Yeah. Hour and 40 minutes long.
Did you like The Faculty?
Yeah, I thought it was okay.
Yeah. I love The Faculty. So,
But the first 5 minutes, it was pretty good, pretty intense. Like some kid is sitting there playing a video game and his parents leave for the night. And then all of a sudden the sister that's stuck home babysitting him is freaking out. She's taking a knife. She's jabbing it into her mouth. It's got blood everywhere. Yanks the kid, runs out of the house like they're being chased by something you don't see. And something terrible happens after that. It was really great first 5 minutes, and then it just nosedives. Like, you cannot watch the rest of this film. It's that dumb. Although it does have bumbling police in it, so there's that.
Well, it does have an upside then, Jeff.
Yeah, it's got one positive point throughout the whole movie. So
just every time I see bumbling police, I think of Joe now. Every time I was going, ooh, Joe would love this one.
I need to. That should be the next shirt. Is I have a soft spot for bumbling police officers.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, just don't wear it in front of a lot of police officers.
Right. Policeman's benevolent ball.
Yeah.
So that's all I had. Mark, what did you watch this past couple of weeks?
I watched basically two things. Well, besides related 7 movies, I watched on Tubi Movie Hoarders. It's a documentary. It's Movie Hoarders, VHS to DVDs and Beyond. And this documentary is about movie lovers, particularly horror fans, who collect all sorts of different types of hard copies, from VHS to DVD to Blu-ray, Laserdisc, even Beta, and even vinyl for movie soundtracks. And it's basically collectors with their phones showing their libraries of thousands upon thousands of copies of films. You know, to the obscure VHS tapes that only a couple hundred copies were printed, to a very rare vinyl Rosemary's Baby vinyl soundtrack. This documentary is about 2 hours long, and unfortunately, it starts to repeat itself around like an hour and 30 minutes. They keep on repeating the word nostalgia, and each person that they're interviewing, you know, starts talking about Blockbuster and, you know, what it means. But I think it's if you like collecting hard copies, if you like directing VHS, Blu-rays, DVDs, whatever, I think it's a pretty good watch. I enjoyed it. I almost became one of these people. I started collecting DVDs, and I think my record, like the most DVDs I had, was like 600. That's nothing compared to what these people have. They have thousands. But I think when a DVD transfer to Blu-ray, I was just like, there's no way I'm starting all over again. It's just too much. And then when streaming happened, and they do talk about it in the documentary, when hard copies are now being less and less because of streaming and how they're, you guys are smiling. But so I sold all my DVDs, and after watching this documentary, I kind of wish I just stayed on path and, you know, kept on collecting Blu-rays, because I sold all of my DVDs, all my hard copies, and I'm starting to get back into it because now I'm like collecting horror films because of me being on CineScare. And now it's all starting to become horror, and I'm really enjoying that. So
you know what is a big collector's thing now too is, well, it has been for a while now, VHS. A lot of people are really
coming back. They talk about
And the thing is, there's a lot of older films, especially like from the 80s, mm-hmm. that still have never been released on DVD or Blu-ray or anything, and so there's still some movies out there that you can only find on VHS.
Yeah, yeah. I'm wondering, Joe, what is, like, you must have a collection. I think you have a collection, don't you, Joe?
Yeah, I have about 600 DVDs and Blu-rays.
600? Yeah, okay, so you were about where I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, because of that documentary that you recommended, the 24x36 about the movie posters.
Yeah.
I just today in the mail received my first Mondo record album. I didn't buy the art, but they re-released the Tron Legacy soundtrack on double vinyl that had all original art by a Mondo artist. And so it's my very, I think that's what I want to start getting into next is
nice.
Just Mondo album soundtracks on vinyl.
Yeah, there's a there's one guy that actually talks about Tron and Tron Legacy, and he has this Blu-ray where it's like a disc, mm-hmm. and you can set it down, and I think it's pretty rare or whatnot, because I'm a huge Tron and Tron Legacy fan. But that's so cool, Joe.
If you want to start up your DVD collection again, I have a copy of The Green Knight on 4K. I'll gladly sell you.
I already have it. Thank you. And I watched it recently too, and I love it still.
I received my Blu-ray of The Green Knight in the mail. Thank you, Superfan, for sending that to me. We haven't had a chance to watch it, and Michelle definitely wants to watch it again because we went to a very late showing on a Friday night, and she fell asleep about maybe halfway through. So she
was
like,
"That doesn't help our cause, Matt."
Well, no,
it doesn't help our guy.
She's not a late night person, and so I was dragging her out there way too late for her. I knew it at the time. I had a feeling it was going to be rough, but she woke up and, you know, after the movie, and she was like, "Oh, I really wanted to stay away because I was loving what I was seeing." But she definitely wants to watch it now. So, yeah.
And by the way, Mark, I'm cursing you. This is all your fault. You sent me that Halloween 2 action figure set.
Yeah.
And after I got it, I was on Books A Million's website, and I saw there was two more Halloween action figures and a Friday the 13th action figure from the same series. They'll be here in 3 days.
Oh my God.
You're getting them?
Yeah.
Are you getting the Laurie Strode one?
No. This is all they had at BAM, and I'm just starting small. So.
Yeah. It was either the Laurie Strode and Donald Pleasance, or the Donald Pleasance and Michael Myers, and I went for that one.
Yeah, actually, one of them I know is from Halloween Kills. It's the Michael Myers Halloween Kills.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Ah, that's cool.
And these are collectibles. They keep going up in price, so it's kind of cool.
And they're worth whatever someone will buy them from you. Until then, they're not worth a thing.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
I watched one more thing. I did God's work. I watched the Netflix All of Us Are Dead 2022 zombie thing. And so this is a 12-hour episodic zombie apocalypse series about a high school that becomes ground zero for a zombie virus outbreak. Trapped students try to fight their way out and also create strong bonds on the way. I mentioned this to Joe, and I believe Joe said he didn't want to invest hours into a series for it to fall off midway, and boy was Joe right. It was fun to watch. I was enjoying it until after like episode 7, and then it just drops and drops horribly. And if they condensed this show into 8 episodes, it would have been great. It would have been awesome. But just there's some fillers. There's just campfire talks. Joe was completely right on it. It's enjoyable to watch. There are some different twists of like antivirus zombies that can still talk and have vendettas against some students. So that was fun. But all in all, it just dragged and dragged. And there were characters in this series that didn't even need to be in it. And they had half hour like scenes. And so it was a brutal watch after episode 7. I'm glad I watched it. But boy, Joe was right on that one. So, yeah. And those are what I watched. 12 hours of that. Kind of
wow.
It.
12 episodes.
12 hour episodes.
Yeah, that's just a bullet that I dodged right there.
Yes, yeah. You did.
Well, good work, Mark, letting
You're
us
welcome.
Know that we didn't need to watch that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that brings us to our theme, which is Joe's, John Doy, Joe's, and of course, Mark Superfan has on the white shirt and tie that is sort of he's noticing that we changed our names on our screens to misspell them.
Spelled.
You
yeah.
guys,
yeah. And but Mark
it's
is just
even
up.
Wrinkled. The shirt's even wrinkled like his
yeah.
was.
Yeah,
if
he
I had
spent
a
lot of time wrinkling it. Yeah.
If I had a basketball tie, man, that would have been awesome.
And needed, you know, maybe a little baggier, that 90s look or whatever. But, you know, Brad Pitt pulls it off for some reason.
Well,
but,
of course he does.
But, yeah, Mark dressed up for the occasion. I love it. I love the enthusiasm. Of course, Joe is wearing a Jason Lives Friday the 13th. Or it looks like from
That's
Jason
That's not Jason
Lives.
Lives.
Wasn't that part 6, Jason?
That is not part 6.
He's in a cemetery, right?
It's a clean T-shirt. I don't know.
That's not a cemetery.
No, it's in front of an old cabin.
Oh, okay.
Kind of looks like Vincent DeSanti's film, Never Hike Alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Anyway.
That's the remake.
Matt's donning something even scarier, a Cub sweatshirt.
I'm wearing a Cub.
That a boy.
I am wearing my... horror movie T-shirt underneath it. It's like
this is
Abbey
fascinating
Road.
Fascinating to all the people listening at home.
Well, this T-shirt is like Abbey Road, but it's got Freddie, Michael, Jason, and I think Leatherface. Anyway, as exciting as that is, we are here to look into. Well, it's not a franchise, but the movie Seven, which was Joe's choice. So, Joe, take it away.
I wanted Tell it, to
set up the scene when you're a little kid, you got your footy, but no, never mind. Go ahead, Joe.
I actually don't really remember when I saw this for the first time. It was probably on VHS somewhere.
You didn't see it in the movie theater?
You didn't see
I don't
it in the movie
I don't
theater?
Think I did.
I don't but I don't think I did either, actually.
I was doing a little research and I'm really confused and perplexed because like IMDb spells this movie S-E, the number 7-E-N. However, on the original artwork for the movie posters that came out, it was just spelled S-E-V-E-N.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of curious how that evolved.
And it's kind of hard to search it sometimes, because sometimes they don't show this movie unless you include that 7 in the middle. So yeah, I don't remember that. But
and I also rewatched the trailer, the original trailer, and I'm hoping I just got a really bad version of it because the audio quality was just terrible. It sounded like everybody's voices were like a half an octave higher. Like it was just all clipped and sped together. Mm. Yeah. But the trailer is not good. The trailer, if I had seen the trailer, and I would have been like, meh. It's certainly not what trailers have evolved to nowadays. Mm. But, yeah.
I wonder what made me go see it in the movie theater. I saw with
it's probably your fascination with Brad Pitt.
Was he that big? What was the movies before?
Yeah, he had just become big. They'd already done
Cool World.
He had done Thelma and Louise and A River Runs Through It. Legends of the Fall. A River Runs Through It.
Oh yeah, I was a Brad Pitt fan. Yeah,
he was he had just blown up at the time. I think. In fact, the reason he did this movie was because of he was trying to avoid doing cheesy movies after doing Legends of the Fall, because he had his shirt off half the time and his long Fabio hair and everything in Legends of the Fall.
He had also done Interview with the Vampire too.
Oh
yeah, that's right. Interview with the Vampire. Yeah.
He was huge.
Oh, he was a big star.
He was a big star. Yeah, yeah. I loved him in Interview with the Vampire. I loved Legends of the Fall. I don't care. I had that on Laserdisc.
I liked him in California.
Yes. Yeah. That was a great movie, Joe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. True Romance.
Yes.
Small bit part, but that was a fantastic part.
Favorite movie of all time. That's right.
And Cool World. Well, Cool World with artwork created. Yes, but the artwork was created by Ralph Bakshi, who created the first animated porno flick, Fritz the Cat, and also one of my all-time favorite movies called Wizards.
And I think Bakshi did The Lord of the Rings, if I'm not mistaken.
The Hobbit, yeah.
Or The Hobbit. He did The Hobbit. Who was the guy who did Lord of the Rings and Heavy Metal? They had like live actors, and then he would he would paint over the live actors. Yeah, I can't remember the guy's name.
I think it's called rotoscoping.
Yes, you're right. Like with at the beginning of Heavy Metal with the taxi driver, that was all rotoscoping.
Yeah,
yeah. And Lord of the Rings, his animated version, which they never made the second. Like it was going to be two parts, and it ends like halfway through the books. But
they did Return of the King afterwards, and Fire and Ice. Fire and Ice is another one of those.
Ralph Bakshi did Return of the King. It was the same, and he did it just to kind of wrap up the story, even which was weird because he didn't do the movie. He did The Hobbit, and then he did a musical, but they had songs in it.
The greatest adventure is what I...
But I digest.
There's our button.
Yep.
And 13 Monkeys, or was it
12 Monkeys?
12 Monkeys.
That was later.
No, that was later.
After this.
It was still 90s, though, right?
Yeah.
It was the same year because Brad Pitt actually was nominated for Best Supporting Actor in the 1996 Academy Awards.
Yeah.
I'm almost positive on that.
Yeah. I mean, it could be.
Yeah. Yeah. He was.
Yeah.
12 Monkeys.
Yeah. 12 Monkeys and 7 both came out in 1995.
Yeah.
Hell of a year for him.
Yeah, that was a big year. And I saw...
Do we need to set up this movie? Do we need to tell our people?
Well,
our faithful listeners?
I mean, sort of.
The simple thing is two detectives, a rookie and a veteran, hunt a serial killer who uses the seven deadly sins as his motives. That's as concise as you can possibly get it.
Right.
But it's got Morgan Freeman in it, who I could spend the rest of my days listening to him read the phone book.
Yep.
He's in my top five like voiceover actors of all time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, he's incredible in it. And the direction, of course, David Fincher. What are you laughing about? Oh, never mind.
Your
name. Yeah, but yeah, the director, David Fincher, who I think, now I'm kind of getting mixed up what years he did things, but he hadn't done a lot up to this point. I think he had done Alien 3 and I'm not quite sure what exactly, maybe some music videos and stuff like that. And then
yeah, he did Vogue.
Did a lot of Rick Springfield shit.
Yeah, he did Vogue, Madonna's Vogue, and he got latched on to Alien 3, which was an absolute production disaster. He got fired three times. He got thrown into like this grinder, and he almost quit filmmaking altogether after that experience. And then he, I think Seven's the next picture after Alien 3.
It is. And, Alien 3 in 92, and then Seven in 95.
Yeah. And, boy, did he knock it out of the park when he had, like, almost complete creative control.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and the casting of this is interesting, too, because I had read that one of the original people that were they were looking at to play Detective Mills was Sylvester Stallone.
No.
Oh, yeah. That would have been amazing.
Yeah. I cannot imagine Sylvester Stallone in that role.
That would have been kind of fun to watch after watching Brad Pitt. Also, Denzel Washington was going to be Detective.
He was offered, and he turned it down because he thought it was too dark, and he went on to regret that. And, of course, also Al Pacino was offered the Morgan Freeman role, and he turned it down, and he later said he regretted turning it down. They both, for the same reason, thought it was too dark.
Boy, we got lucky.
Yeah.
By the way, Mark, you'd be interested to know this because of your current attire that Brad Pitt decided to buy his own ties for the film.
Yeah.
Because he figured that his character should have really poor fashion sense.
And he tried to be as ugly as he could after Legends of the Fall.
It did a terrible job. Terrible job.
He still looked great.
He's just striking. Yeah, I wish I looked that ugly. Yeah,
I mean, he cut his hair like really short. I mean, he tried to look
greasy.
It made
him just look better.
He looked sexy as hell. Damn that.
Yeah, no, he's like just the epitome of handsome.
Bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this movie from start to finish. I mean, this is a perfect film in my eyes, from the acting, the directing, the cinematography, the colors and the grain of film, and even the beautiful music score by Trent Reznor. And I know walking, out of the theater when I saw that, I knew it was special, and I knew it was going to last and be remembered forever. I really did. I was like knocked off my socks. So was like the whole entire audience. There was tons of gaffes, and I thought it was going to be nominated for Best Picture, and unfortunately, he wasn't even nominated. It was nominated, I think, for editing. I think it was nominated only for editing, But Braveheart won Best Picture, I think, that year. But this film has gone to outlast most of the nominated films. Yeah, I mean, what were the films nominated? It was Braveheart, Babe. Do I have written it down? Postman Ill something.
Il Postino.
Yeah, Il Postino, Apollo 13, and Sense and Sensibility. I haven't seen Babe. I saw Apollo 13.
You never saw Babe?
No, I never saw Babe.
God, why would
I
want to
see
a
dancing pig?
Because it's not a good movie.
I don't think he dances, but it is a very good movie, surprisingly. Isn't it made by the same guy who does the Mad Max movies and all of those?
No, it's not. Know. No, it's not. No way. What's his name?
It's made by some film auteur. I can't remember which one it is, but
so this was actually nominated in the Academy Awards for Best Film Editing.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
In the awards,
David Fincher,
Best Director, and it was a nominee for Best Picture, Best Supporting Actress, Best Original Screenplay, Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, Best Sound Design, and Best Film Editing.
Seven?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't. I only thought it was nominated for editing.
Nope.
So did any of them win?
This was the 2020 awards. This wasn't the Academy Awards. The only Academy Awards that it was nominated for, you were correct, is Best Film Editing. But they go on. There's a list like the BAFTA Awards, Saturn. The 2020 Awards, Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films, ASCAP Awards, blah, blah, blah. It won lots of other things, just not the big one.
So all the awards have taste, but the Academy. But we already knew that.
And I stand corrected on the director of Babe. It was not George Miller. It was the director of the Road Warrior movies and Mad Max. He didn't direct Babe. He directed the sequel, which was Babe Pig in the
City. Babe Pig in the City.
Yeah.
You gotta see that shit, Mark.
And that one,
that too?
Yeah.
Yeah. That one's considered one of the best sequels. It was highly rated. Yeah,
it's like Godfather Part Two.
No, it's not. Isn't that with James Cromwell? He goes, "Attaboy, pig, attaboy."
Did you see it?
Or
that'll do, pig.
That'll do, pig. No, but that's like the line.
Because it's a famous movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. And actually, Babe, Pig in the City, which was directed by the director of Mad Max, George Miller, and all those movies. I read
George
some article.
Miller directed that movie.
Yeah, he directed the sequel. I read some article saying that some writer was saying, "Sorry, all you Mad Max fans, but Babe, Pig in the City is his masterpiece." Yeah.
Oh yeah, Fury Road's not his masterpiece. Get out.
You haven't said. Okay. Unfortunately, you don't have. Unlike Joe and I, you don't have a point of reference to compare. So.
Yeah.
And when you get that, then you
I'm
can come
edumacated.
Back and we'll have this. Yeah. In fact, let's just
I'll
close out
Advent
his
calendar
screen because he hasn't watched.
Before I watch
it.
Babe.
Yeah, he's got to watch Babe, Pig in the City, and Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
We'll just start making a list, and we'll put it up on the website. Movies Mark needs
he's
to watch.
He's
going to
be so far
okay,
behind.
Okay, so you know when I talk to people about Seven, usually, of course, the
you're
first
talking
thing,
to random people on the street, or
well, no, like
start
when,
up the conversation.
No. Well, how often does Seven like pop up when you talk to some you know movie fans? It pops up occasionally, right? Just like Seven. Oh yeah, great. It's detective, psychological. Thriller ever. I mean, it just pops up. But when I talk to people about Seven, I mean, usually, of course, the first thing brought up is The Head in the Box. And then the next thing is how graphic the murders are. But I don't think they are. If you look at the movie, it's all talked about. The murders. It's the two lead detectives talking about what happened. But when they are talking about the murders...
Well, there is gore, but it's not. Well, yeah. There's no violence shown, really.
There's no violence.
Exactly. Yeah. So when they're talking about the murders, we see the victims front, stage, and center, right? Yeah. And what we see is we see the blood, we see the cuts, we see the gashes, we see severed hands, we see all this, but we never do see the murders, and we use our imagination on how it went down for a couple seconds during each crime scene, and it's our imagination that really makes it worse, I believe. And I mean, there's very little violence in this film, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. The most violent thing is when John Doe shoots at the detectives.
Right. And when Brad Pitt actually injures himself.
Yeah, when he gets – or that. No, the most violent thing, I guess, is when Brad Pitt gets hit in the head with the gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the most violent thing you see,
Right. Yeah.
What was the one scene where Brad Pitt does injure – he severs something on his hand.
He landed
on the windshield? Or was it going through the glass?
It was going through the glass,
windshield,
I think.
I thought it was the windshield of a car.
I thought it was the windshield.
Yeah, it might have been, yeah.
Yeah, but he had to have surgery. Really hurt himself.
Yeah, he had to have surgery in it.
But it's great afterwards.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, and then he's got it wrapped up and everything. Yeah, no, it works totally.
Yeah. It was a great scene when Morgan Freeman's... Williams or Summer says to him, said, "You cannot open that door." And he just kicks it open.
You know, one of the things, yeah, I was about to, that's funny because I was actually thinking of that scene when you said that just now. Because one of the things that I you know, when they get to that part, I'm like, what would they do? Because when they were at knocking at his door, the guy starts shooting at them. So they obviously at that point have probable cause. And you just, you know, I would think you would just, there's no way of getting around it. Like Morgan Freeman was saying, we cannot open this door. We got to leave, as though he wanted to just leave. But meanwhile, there's been this chase, gunshots fired, going through people's apartments. You can't just leave anyway. Like you're kind of screwed at that point. Like Brad Pitt really was right. You've got to get in that apartment at that point. You can't just leave. And
but there was no reason for them to be at that door. That's what he kept on saying.
Right. No, I know. But once the guy got there and started shooting at them, they kind of had to go through with it anyway, whether, you know, that meant getting fired or whatever, you know, but they couldn't
just
leave.
Yeah, Mills was right on that. Mills was completely right. Like, we got to open this door.
Right.
Just, you know,
yeah,
be a junkie.
Just for the audience, at a certain point, they do go to an apartment where the actual killer lives, and they got the name. By now, I think it's true that that Homeland Security does have access to people's library accounts, but back then they didn't officially.
It came in with the Patriot Act.
Yeah, right. Hmm. But back then they didn't officially. But so Morgan Freeman knew a guy in the FBI, and they could access. They just couldn't do it officially. They could access that information of what books people are checking out. So if they're looking for a guy in, you know, a city who did a certain kind of bomb or whatever, they might look up. They might go to the library and look up books that have been checked out. And if there's one name, and there's certain kinds of books, Mein Kampf or whatever, that will raise red flags. And if, you know, then they look down the list of people who have checked out those books from the library. And so they found this guy based on these books that he had checked out. And they decided to go knock on his door and talk to him to find out, you know, if he might be suspicious. And if so, then they would take the next step of focusing their, you know, investigation on him and find evidence other ways. But what happens, of course, is they go and knock on his door, and the real killer walks upon them in the hallway, pulls out a gun, and starts shooting at them. So there was a bit of a quandary as to how to handle that situation, because they really technically shouldn't have been there.
Speaking of library, I wanted to point out that is one of my favorite scenes in this film, the contrast.
Yeah.
Because you're in this world, this dreary, always raining, dark, disgusting world of chaos, and you're constantly looking to find the answers to this psychopath who's basing his murders off the seven deadly sins, and Morgan Freeman finds solace in the library.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, they've got box suite number 3 and D playing, and he's going through all this beautiful literature and culture, but for the worst possible reason ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love the deep contrast in that in the center
the
of the film.
The green lights.
Yeah.
And I'm wrapping my head around trying to solve that mystery before the internet. You know, it's
right.
Just,
yeah.
The countless hours of research you'd have to do and reading. Oh.
Yeah. No, that's one of the notes I took on this also was I loved the classical music they played. You know, and they obviously had it set up for him. It's like it's probably something he's done a million times, yet he knows the guys. They let him in after hours, and he just sits back, and they have that music for him while they play cards. And I loved that. I thought it would just added a touch. There's so much about this movie that could easily have just gone into the direction of a very stereotypical kind of thriller, you know, and they could have made a happy ending and all of this stuff. But and by the way, of course, if you're not familiar with our show, we will go into spoilers on this. So if you've never seen Seven, stop this episode now. Go watch it, then come back.
Go watch 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Yeah. Then watch seven, then come back.
I love that one line when Morgan Freeman's in the library too, and he just looks up to the poker place going, all this knowledge, you're playing poker.
Poker, yeah.
Right, like, yeah.
Oh, gosh, what a great scene.
And then there's just little things that, you know, just such a subtle, and I do think I like David Fincher as a director, but I feel like sometimes he gets a little caught up in his trickery, and some of his stuff seems a little gimmicky at times to me, but there's so many subtle little nuances in this movie. And I feel like this, sometimes his movies, the style overbears the substance, like Panic Room. I feel like that is an example where he had more style than substance in that movie.
Yeah.
I thought that Fight Club kind of wrestled back and forth with that a little bit. And Mark, stop making faces.
I'm sorry.
I thought Fight Club kind of struggled with that back and forth. Overall, I think I'm not as in love with that movie as a lot of people are, but I feel like this one is just, it was the perfect balance of his kind of style. It was, you know, it just, everything worked. And there's just this moment when they're walking into a crime scene where Brad Pitt starts questioning a street cop about the way that they have kind of set up the scene, and did you check his vitals and blah blah blah, and the guy was like, no, and he's like, well, is that the way you do things around here or whatever? And then when they get inside and the cop has left them alone, Morgan Freeman says, what exactly was the point of the conversation you were about to get into? And I loved that. It's just like he's calling him on it, but he's making him think about, why did you even start that conversation? Obvious. And really, Morgan Freeman's saying, I think Morgan Freeman's saying, you're just trying to show everyone that you know. You know what I mean? It's like there's no real point to that conversation. If they didn't do the crime scene the way it was supposed to be, we'll have to figure it out. So why even start the conversation? Like, you're just trying to make yourself look big, you know?
Yeah. I loved how Brad Pitt, Detective Mills, commented back afterwards going, I don't know, how many times have Barney Fife, been in a crime scene? Yeah. But you're right. It's everything about this film so good.
Yeah, and then another little subtle nuance was when Morgan Freeman gets on board and wants to be a part of it, and he's talking to the chief, played by Lee Ray. What's his L? Ermy. What's his name?
Arlie Ermy.
When he's talking to him about the seven deadly sins, and he shows the picture. I don't know if you guys caught this. He shows the pictures to Brad Pitt and says envy, and the pictures for a moment cut off Brad Pitt's head. And when he says envy, the pictures are right over Brad Pitt's head. And I thought that might be a subtle, like, I think that was a director. Obviously, anything in a movie, I think, is a directorial choice. But I think that might have been a little nod to, you know, maybe the head at the end, you know.
I'm too busy laughing at Arlie Ermy saying, this isn't even my desk, when the phone rings.
that's great. Right.
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
And it was totally ad-libbed, because when they were shooting the scene... Yeah, they were shooting the scene. That phone accidentally rang, and he picked it up and said, this isn't even my desk, and hang up and kept rolling.
Oh, that's even better.
And
anybody that is asking who this actor that we're talking about, he's the drill sergeant from Full Metal Jacket.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's been in a lot of different things. Yeah. He was an actual drill sergeant. When he was, I believe, in the Marines.
And his favorite movie is Babe, Pig in the City.
Yeah. Directed by George Miller. And yeah. Mark has still never seen either of those movies, sadly.
So are we ready to go to the task at hand?
What's
with
that?
The double feature?
Oh, yeah. Let's.
So, Matt, just to catch everybody else up, Matt had given us the task of, if you were to stage a double feature with Seven, of course, being one of the two movies, what would you pair it with?
Right.
So, Matt, that was your idea. So what was yours?
Okay. Well, I had a few that I watched that, and this was great because there were a few movies that I had not seen before. And I there were a couple that I had thought that I had seen before, and there were two that I hadn't seen before. Now, the two that I had seen before, the first one, and I'm, even as I'm sitting here talking right now, I'm still bouncing back and forth on which one I would do as a double features, but I have chosen it, and I have my reasons why. But okay, so the first movie that I thought of was a film from 1987, and that is starring Mickey Rourke, Robert De Niro, and Lisa Bonet, and that is Angel Heart. And I absolutely, this is one that I've loved for a long time. And when it came out in 87, I was all over this movie. It was, of course, De Niro was one of my favorite actors. And I liked Mickey Rourke from the time I saw him in Diner and, you know, some of those. I think there was, I can't remember the other, there was another couple of movies that I really liked that he was in. But Angel Heart is a kind of noir, and that's, you know, Seven, that's one thing we haven't mentioned, is that it's sort of an updated noir. That's what David Fincher was trying to do. He wanted to make a black and white movie in color, and it's sort of a detective noir movie, darker and, you know, updated to today. And Angel Heart is that too. It's a noir. It is a mystery. It's sort of a convoluted plot. It's not, obviously, none of these movies are the exact same plot, but it's very similar. Robert De Niro plays a guy who is asking Detective Harry Angel to go on a search for a missing person. It's a guy who owes Robert De Niro. And Robert De Niro plays this kind of shadowy figure by the name of Louis Cipher, and which is, of course, Lucifer, and he's sort of supposed to represent the devil. And the idea, as you go along, is you begin to realize that the missing person owes him his soul. But we don't know who the missing person is. I won't say anything because this is not necessarily one that it didn't get a huge, I mean, there was talked about a lot, but it didn't do that great. And it's not one you hear talked about that much now. And I think it's sort of a forgotten gem. I think among, you know, fans of the genre, I'm sure everyone is a big fan of Angel Heart. But anyway, this is one, I didn't choose this one just because it is relatively well known. The next thing I watched was a Japanese film called Cure, which I found on the Criterion Channel. And this was really, this is the one that I kind of was bouncing back and forth with putting it as my double feature. There's a wave of gruesome murders in Tokyo. And the thing that connects each of these, the method of murder is not the same in all of these, but what connects them is that each of the victims has an X carved into their back. However, the murderer is always someone different in each of these murders, and they are found not far away from the crime scene, sort of bewildered and dazed, and don't really remember what happened, and kind of remember murdering the person, but they don't know why they did it. They're not murderers. They're just normal, everyday people. One of them is a cop, and it comes to find out this one detective is searching, and they come to realize that they've all had a connection to this one guy who claims to sort of have an amnesia, but they begin to see that he has some, he might be hypnotizing these people into murdering others. So it's a really good kind of noirish, very similar feel to Seven. A really good mystery. This is, and it's called Cure, directed by Kiyoshi Kurosawa. And it is, I think, really one of the better movies I've seen in a while as a discovery. So I highly recommend that one. Again, that's not one I'm going to pick. And then the next one I watched that is not going to be in the double feature is a German film that was highly influenced, 1983 German film by a director named Gerald Kargl, who never directed anything else. He's sort of a legend that he was this auteur, this director who really created this groundbreaking, highly influential film and then never directed anything else ever again. It was very controversial, shocking. The murders in it are pretty disturbing in a way. And it's not so much what you see as much as how it's done. The camera work and the camera angles, the cinematography is absolutely groundbreaking and breathtaking. There are angles in this camera angles that I noticed in Seven that are very similar, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was high. It was very influenced by angst. Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer is another movie heavily influenced by angst. But basically, you're seeing a serial killer who has been rehabilitated, supposedly released from prison, and he goes on another killing spree. And the camera hovers over him or under him, and it moves along with him. They even have cameras, and this is something I had never seen in a movie until maybe the 90s or 2000s, a camera being strapped to someone so that we see their face as they're running, you know what I mean? Like, and so it has that kind of like that weird thing where there's a camera right there while somebody's trying to run away. It's really amazing and very disturbing. Excellent, excellent movie, and not for the faint of heart. But we basically see the whole thing through the eyes of the serial killer. While he's murdering these people and torturing or whatever, we hear his narration over it, and what he wants to do to these people, and what but he's also not that good at it. It's amazing. So I didn't choose that one because it's not quite in the same vein as these others. But the one I did choose was 1986's Michael Mann directed Manhunter, which was the first appearance of Hannibal Lecter and he was played in this by the amazing Brian Cox you may know him from the TV show Succession on HBO now. And he's much younger in this, obviously, 1986. But I would love to see more of his Hannibal Lecter. I as much as I love Anthony Hopkins, his was pretty good too. And this is Michael Mann in the middle of his Miami Vice days and his powers as a director. It's FBI agent Will Graham is out looking for a serial killer, and he uses Hannibal Lecter to help him try to find this guy. So it's highly stylized. It's a far better movie than the one that came out maybe 10 or so years ago called Red Dragon. I think it's much, much better movie than that one. And I thought it's just a tight film. And I thought it would be a really nice double feature to go along with Seven. A little different stylistically, but also both very much directed by auteurs who are really at the height of their powers when they made these particular movies, and relatively early in their careers. Like Seven was relatively early in David Fincher's career, and Manhunter was pretty early in Michael Mann's career. It might have even been his first feature film. I'm not sure, but anyway, those are my double features. Joe, how about you?
Well, not to be outdone by Matt, but I analyzed and scrutinized over 8,000 films that I did not pick, and I'm going to review each one of them right now, one at a time, in chronological order.
I didn't watch much. So I was going to talk about them at this part because I didn't watch involved with this.
Got it.
No, I obviously did not do anywhere near this is a simple one for me. I picked three films that I would just love to see with it. And one of them is quite similar to yours that I am not going with. But my first one was Silence of the Lambs, just because of the hunting of a serial killer, the same gritty atmosphere, the wonderful story, a character you can really get behind. So, but Silence of the Lambs wasn't close enough for me. So my next pick as a double feature would have been The Usual Suspects, because I got to have some verbal kint and some Kaiser Soze, and I can't get enough of, now I lost his name, John Doe. Kevin Spacey. Kevin Spacey. I need so much Kevin Spacey so I'd stop forgetting his name. but again, it's that whole murder mystery, misdirection, detective.
Both of those mystery. Would have been a little on the nose, right?
They're extremely on the nose. And if you think that's on the nose, wait till you see the one that I picked.
Oh.
Because what I want to go with number 7 is 8mm.
That was one I thought of, too.
Yeah.
Because they're both written by Andrew Walker.
Yep.
Yep.
And again, it's a dark, gritty, disgusting, snuff. You go from the 7 Deadly Sins to a snuff film. It's one just about, one of the 7 Deadly Sins. It just seems so, exactly as you put it, on the nose and such an easy no-brainer that, I would watch both of those movies back-to-back and feel dirty and disgusting afterwards.
Joaquin's great in that film, too.
Yeah.
And Nicolas Cage.
Despite my opinions of Nicolas Cage, that's
I love
I
it,
pick.
Joe.
Yeah.
I
but
love
you
it.
You don't own it, Joe. You don't own that film.
No, I don't know. 8mm, like I own 7. I can watch that time and time again. 8mm, I can't do it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it did have an interesting scene. I thought towards the end before he was going to go confront the killer or find the killer. Or he knew who it was, and he was. But there was a scene where he stops someplace and calls one of the victims, or the family of one of the victims, or something like that, to kind of
calls the mother of the girl that was snuffed.
Yeah, but it was like he was almost. I've never seen that a hero. In a movie, the protagonist calling someone to get himself pumped up to go do this thing. Yet most revenge movies, the person just goes in and does it they are intent. But he was he had to get psyched up.
And it's he was asking permission.
Right.
From the mother of the,
Yeah,
the only
true.
Thing that would have made that better is if he had had a whole bunch of bad PCP before going after the killer. Yeah. And then we got two movies in once. So that was my pairing with that, like a fine wine. So, Mark, what did you pair for your double feature?
I only picked 2, and this one's a little bit also on the nose, but I think it's less known, and that's Identity, the 2003 film.
Mm-hmm.
Love that film.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Great. It's basically. People are stranded at a desolate Nevada motel during a nasty rainstorm. 10 strangers become acquainted with each other.
Just don't give it away.
Yeah, I won't. Okay. When they realize that they are being killed off by one of them. And it stars John Cusack, Amanda Peetz, Ray Liotta, and John Hawks, who I love. I love John Hawks. And it's not a bad film. It has a great ending that definitely puts a huge twist at the end of the film, and I love that film.
And for the record, you had me at John Cusack.
I love John Cusack. Yeah. I don't care if he's he's a traitor with Sox and Cubs, but we won't get into that.
He is? Why? Yes. What happened there?
Well, he's a Cubs fan. We can't get into this. It'll take too long.
All right. Yeah. All right.
But the one I picked, I went out of the box. I went sort of like how Matt did. I went for the 1931 film M.
Oh.
It's on HBO Max right now. And I basically, I had no idea about this film. I was just going, movies that are 7. That's what I did on the internet. And I went through all of them. And I saw Silence of the Lambs and... Manhunter and all that. But I saw M. I was 1931. So, and it was on HBO Max, and it's a Criterion Collection 2. It's about a child murderer who lures children and candy. This is a German film, by the way. But it's about a child murderer who loves who lures children and with candy and balloons. The police can't find a murderer, so they do a city manhunt. This puts a strain on the criminals on the city, and so they also do investigations. The criminals try to put a stop to it because the cops are all over the place, and it's hindering, you know, their criminal activities. And Peter Lorre is in this film. It's one of his first films he's been in. And he also stars in Peter Lorre is also in Casablanca.
Peter Lorre.
Dang it, I'm sorry. Thank you for that, Matt. Peter Lorre. And it's directed beautifully by Fritz Lang, who also directed Metropolis and the 1963's Contempt that I haven't seen, but I guess it's very well known. And in this movie, I mean, there's amazing shots in it. There's a smoke-filled lens. There's shadowed figures. It's really well shot. And there's a lot of wonderful character faces that imprint in your brain. It's very well-pronounced character faces in it that I'm still like thinking about. Just really great. It's a great movie. What I wish that this movie had, but it's unfortunately it's 1931. There's no music in it, Joe. So you're gonna really probably there's parts in this film that there's no sound at all. You just see mobs just like walking, and there's no sound. So Joe might have a hard time going through it. There's a great speech at the end by
Peter Lorre.
There's a great speech at the end. Oscar winning performance, in my opinion. It's really great at the end. Matt, have you seen it?
No, I have not seen this one, no.
Yeah, well, I really enjoyed it. For a 1931 film, I mean, it's pretty well done. So that's what I picked. Went outside of the box.
All right. Are we rapping on our love of the movie Seven?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we didn't really talk about the ending, of course, you know, which I think is one of the great endings. I just think it's one of the greatest endings ever. And they almost, I mean, the studio wanted to change it. They wanted to.
Studio's stupid.
Yeah, they wanted to make it a happier ending or whatever. But Brad Pitt said he would not do the movie if they changed the ending.
There was like a song and dance number at the end, wasn't there?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, Fozzie Bear pops
Fozzie
out of the
Bear.
Box.
Yeah.
There was
what's in the box? Waka waka waka.
No, there was one rewrite on it where John Doe was creeping into Tracy's apartment, and Brad Pitt, you know, Mills is like doing a car, you know, through, you know, and like busting into the apartment and shooting John Doe, you know, saving her. And when Brad Pitt saw that, he's like, no, I signed on for the first draft only. I think everybody wanted the first draft but the executives, so that just explains a lot.
Before, I know Joe has a trivia, before we get to that, I did want to say also that I had read that David Fincher said he had been thinking about Bill, who's the director of The Exorcist? William Friedkin. Yeah. William Friedkin. He had been thinking about it, wanting it to be sort of like a 70s William Friedkin movie in the same vein as like The French Connection and those kinds of films that he did back in those days. And I can totally see that. Minus, you know, they didn't have a car chase or anything. But all right, Joe, what are you? Joe has.
All right, we're going to show you what's in the box.
Oh, what's in the box?
And that's the trivia for the movie Seven. Now, are you prepared?
What kind of Seven music theme, like what kind of Seven trivia theme music do you have in mind?
We're probably going to do Bach suite or the Bach piece that's playing in the library.
I like it. You know, yeah.
There's
yeah.
really it's that, or we play Trent Reznor's Nine Inch Nails stuff.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So Mark just got up and walked away.
He has given up already. He's so hurt by losing all these other episodes. I think this is going to be the one that he wins, though, because I don't think I'm as up on 7 Trivia as he's going to be. So.
Oh, hey, there he is. Back.
There he is.
Sorry, passing a kidney stone in. Sometimes it happens. You gotta go.
Well, then, without further ado, we'll...
Sorry.
We'll
edit
start
it out.
Trivia.
Edit it out. Okay, no, just edit
no,
it out.
No, oh, no, kidney stones stay. In fact, that's your new bumper.
Yep. That's going to be his name for the
By the
show.
Way, audience, if you have not been hanging around until post-credits, you've been missing out on a little tidbit that Mr. Joe Janz always gives you every episode. God. If you wait around after the episode, after the CineScare theme is done playing, Joe has usually has a little snippet. It's mostly
it's a gift.
It's mostly
a gift, really.
Yeah. Superfan Mark quotes from the episode, but sometimes there'll be other stuff in there too. But yeah, there's some good ones.
Only when it's worthy.
Right.
I'm not going to force anything. Like this episode, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But,
yeah.
Well, okay, you guys... Yeah, it's true. Do you guys happen to have a piece of paper and a pen with you? Could you get one relatively quickly?
Yes.
You will need it for the first question, and you will need it for the bonus question.
All right. Bonus question. Yes, I've got it.
Okay. Other than this one, it's normal rules. Your name is your buzzer, like we've always done. But this very first question, in the short amount of time that I'm going to give you, question number one, name the 7 deadly sins. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, pens down, tablets up.
I can't think of all of them.
What do you got? Mark, read them off. Lust, gluttony, envy, sloth, wrath, pride, and greed. Wow, Mark got all 7.
I got 4, or no, I don't even have 4.
What do you got there?
Can you... Gluttony, sloth.
Sloth.
I put
vanity.
Envy.
Envy.
Vanity is not what vanity is actually envy. Pride.
Pride.
So you
right.
got 3.
Dang.
Okay, so it's currently 3-7.
I froze up on that one.
Okay, well, all right. Now, back to the regular format. Your name is your question. Are you guys both ready?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Who... directed the movie 7?
Mark.
Matt.
Mark.
David Fincher.
That is correct.
Wait until the question is read.
How long has William Somerset been a police officer at the beginning of the film?
Mark.
Mark.
20 years.
No!
Incorrect.
Matt.
Matt.
30 years.
No!
Also incorrect. 34 years.
Dang.
Question number 4. What city was the movie set?
Matt.
Matt.
It is never said.
That is correct. God. Nice catch on a trick question. Yeah. Question number 5. What bedside device apparently helps Somerset sleep?
Mark.
Mark.
Oh, I don't know the device. The TikToker.
No!
Matt.
Metronome.
That is correct.
You freaking Wordle smarty...
But does he sleep to it, or does he set it when he... I felt like he turned it on when he woke up.
He sleeps to it. He's
trying to... It puts him to sleep.
It puts him to sleep.
Okay, question number 6. At the film's opening, how long is it before Somerset intends to retire?
Matt.
Matt.
5 days?
No!
Incorrect.
Mark.
Mark.
7 days.
Correct, or 1 week. Point for Mark. Okay, question number 7. John Doe punishes those guilty of committing one of the 7 deadly sins. The victim he goes after first is guilty of which sin?
Mark.
Mark.
Gluttony.
No!
Incorrect. Matt. Did you have an answer?
The one he goes after first is sloth.
That is correct.
Oh, trick question.
A trick question.
It's not a trick question.
Gluttony is the first victim found, but sloth actually took place a year prior.
You're right. Well done, Matt. Damn it.
The only reason I got that right is because he went first, because I would have said gluttony too.
Question number 8. What did John Doe take from the greed victim to symbolize his sin?
Mark. A pound of flesh.
That is correct. From The Merchant of Venice. Mark.
Now this is going to be... I knew it. Mark's going to win this one.
No. Don't jinx it. No, don't jinx it. This is what you do. Don't get in my head. Let's go, Joe.
Ever said that before?
We'll have to go back and listen to all the previous episodes. Question number 9. What occupation is the greed victim?
Mark.
I think Mark came in.
He's a lawyer.
Can you be more specific?
He's an attorney? Lawyer?
Can you be more specific?
District attorney.
No!
Incorrect.
He is a criminal lawyer, or for a defense lawyer?
Defense attorney is
defense
the correct
attorney,
answer,
yeah.
Because he helps the guilty escape punishment. That's why I was looking for that specifically.
Okay. Nice job, man. Nice job.
Question number 10. At the greed crime scene, what is written behind
Matt.
The painting? Matt.
Help me.
That is correct. Question number 11. And by the way, there are 23 plus a bonus. So 20. Question number 11. What was the unusual name of the SWAT leader played by John C. McGinley?
Oh.
I don't know.
Oh.
Mark's passing another kidney stone.
Holy cow. Detective Mills is really hurting right now.
God.
And I'm
Point
throwing
break.
That one.
No!
Nope, I'm throwing that one out.
What is it?
His name's California.
God!
Do you remember what the helicopter
was?
California.
That's why I was thinking it.
California, stay away from here.
Stay
away from
here.
I'm coming here.
I wonder if his heart got shaved.
Whatever you hear, stay away.
I wouldn't say he's a star.
John Doe has the upper hand.
He had done Platoon. He'd done quite a bit. He's a recognizable face.
He was at Point Break.
Yeah, I don't think. Was Scrubs on at that point?
95?
I think
I don't know.
No, no. He wasn't in Scrubs yet.
Probably not, yeah.
Actually, no, I'm not. We'll look at it for some other time. Okay, question number 12. What shocks the detectives about John Doe's apartment when they find it?
Mark.
All of the detectives.
Matt.
Mark.
How organized it is.
No!
There's no fingerprints.
Correct.
God bless it. Why did...
Not a single fingerprint in the entire apartment. Yes. Question number 13. Which two items are glued to the pride victim's hands?
Mark. A bottle of pills.
And I'm asking for two items.
A razor.
No!
Incorrect.
A bottle of pills and a knife?
No!
Incorrect. Oh, no! I know!
A phone in one hand, a bottle of sleeping pills in the other.
Yeah. I was going to say phone, but then he said razor, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, why would he? Why would she? Why was there a phone in the other hand?
She
could have called
for
help. But her face was already disfigured. She didn't want to call for help.
You know what?
Come on, Mark.
That one, I got screwed up with Saw, because Saw would have had her with a bottle of pills to kill herself or a knife to cut her
knife
face
to kill
off.
Herself. Yeah,
yeah. Jeez Louise. Too many Saw movies.
Okay, question number 14. This is a deep, deep, deep dive. What is John Doe's apartment number?
Matt.
Matt.
306.
What are you looking at?
306.
No!
Incorrect.
Damn it.
Mark?
307.
I just looked this up.
Incorrect.
I knew it was going to be on this. 605?
No, but you're close. It was 604.
Oh. I looked that up before the show because I had a feeling that was going to be one of the questions.
Well, I was going to do a whole mathematic equation thing, and then I dropped it.
No,
so
no,
a lot of these have to do with numbers. So
I would have loved that.
Speaking of which, question number 15. How many notebooks are found in John Doe's apartment?
Mark.
Mark.
2,000.
That is correct.
Yes, Mark. Yes. There you go, baby.
Question number 16. What two sins remain as Mills and Somerset prepare to go outside
Mark.
The city?
Mark.
Mark.
Mark. Envy and wrath.
That is correct. Matt, is your mic working?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right, good. Question number 17.
I told you, Mark knows this one better than me.
Question number 17. What is the name of the delivery company that delivers the box?
Oh, no. I don't know this one.
I don't remember.
All right, throwing it out. Crosstown
chicken?
Express.
No, Crosstown Express. For some reason, I was thinking of chicken.
Okay. Question number 18. What's in the box?
Matt.
Mark.
Matt.
Matt got it.
His wife's head.
That is correct.
Oh, also blood.
Yeah.
Her pretty head.
And space and oxygen.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
cardboard.
Corrugated cardboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it.
Question number 19. What are John Doe's final words?
Mark.
Mark.
Oh, he didn't know.
That is correct.
Yes.
He didn't know.
Wow.
He didn't know.
Mark's going to win. Look at him.
Stop it, man. Stop saying
it. He's feeling it.
No. Stop.
How could I jinx that? It's not like you're winning because of luck.
Okay,
you're a Cubs fan. You don't know anything about jinxing?
I'm gonna get back to my questions.
Okay.
So question number 20. This is lengthy, so Mark, jump in whenever you want. If the point of John Doe's masterpiece was indeed for seven people to die for committing each of the deadly sins, then by the film's end, it was technically incomplete. One sinner was left alive. Which of
Matt.
The seven... Matt?
Wrath.
Come vengeance, David.
Oh, she's all right. You tell me.
That is correct.
Come.
Wrath. Vengeance. By the time John Doe surrenders, there's still two more that have to be done. David Mills does not actually die at the end of the film. So.
Right.
That was 20... Question number 21.
I'm jumping in next time. I'm not going to be just waiting till the end of the question. I know you told me to get in there, but
which writer does Somerset quote at the end of the film?
Oh boy. Mark.
Mark?
Hawthorne?
No.
Incorrect.
Nah.
Shakespeare?
No.
Also incorrect. Ernest Hemingway.
Mm. I was closer.
Question 22. What did he quote?
Are you asking what the quote was?
What is the Ernest Hemingway quote?
I don't.
You're going to kick yourself when you hear it.
It's
the last words of the movie.
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Okay. The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
Yeah, yeah.
God, Mark.
Last regular question. What is the title of the 2015 sequel?
What?
What is the title of the 2015 sequel? You'll love this.
2015.
Mark. 8?
No!
8 Mile?
No.
2015
sequel.
Sequel.
There's no sequel to 7.
Mm. I don't know. The movie Along Came a Spider?
No. The movie is called Solace, starring Anthony Hopkins, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Colin Farrell. It's a tale about a serial killer, a psychic, and a pair of FBI agents looking to solve the killings. The script for the movie was originally picked up by New Line Cinema with the intention to rewrite it as a sequel to the movie Seven, tentatively titled 8, E-I, the number 8, H-T. The main character was supposed to be the Seven's detective, William Somerset, Morgan Freeman, who had acquired psychic powers.
This idea was dropped
after Seven director David Fincher reacted negatively to the idea, after which the movie was produced as a standalone film.
Wow.
Wow, that's...
I need to watch that film, because that
sounds terrible.
Horrible.
Okay, and then here is the bonus question.
Are we tied?
I have no idea. I'm not even going to tally it up
yet. You're heavily winning, I'm sure.
This bonus question is potentially worth 7 points. Get your piece of paper and pens out again.
No, 7 points! All right.
Wait. I think you're both wasting your time. Name any... you guys are Catholic, or at least went to a Catholic university.
Lutheran.
Yes.
Name any of the 7 capital virtues.
What? 7 capital virtues? You said this was going to be in the movie.
This is a bonus. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, pens down. All right, Mark, just tell me what you got. rigged. Nope, that is not one of them. Matt, do you have any?
Charity?
Nope.
Love?
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Charity is one of them.
Yeah, I thought charity was. Love?
So, charity is one. Love is not.
Healing?
No.
Peace? Or peacemaking?
No.
Prayer? I don't know. That's all. I have none.
Chastity, the opposite of love. Temperance, the opposite of gluttony. Charity, the opposite of greed. Diligence, the opposite of sloth. Kindness, the opposite of envy. Patience, the opposite of wrath. And humility, the opposite of pride.
Hmm.
So, Matt, you get 1 point for that. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Wow. 12 to 13.
Wow.
Wins.
Yes! Let's go!
I didn't realize it was going to be that close.
I didn't think it was going to be that close either. I thought he had killed me in there.
Yeah, 12 to 13. Congratulations,
12 to 13? Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah.
12 to 13. If I had
just done kindness, it was in my head, too, and I didn't do it.
Oh, just think, if you had just gotten
one more
of those careful virtues, yeah.
And then, can you imagine if I'd done two, and he had...
Oh, my God.
We'd lost his mind.
We'd have to do the next episode by ourselves.
You're against me. You're against me. It's rigged. It's rigged.
I like to thank the Academy for this win. I thank my parents for taking care of me for all this time and putting up with me. I like to thank movies all in general for this win. And thank you so much.
And, you know, Joe, this was almost a year after he joined our show. He gets his first win. I'm so proud of the Mark Superfan.
I'm really proud of myself.
And we had done a lot of trivia up to, you know, for a while there. So getting your first win a year in. Good job, Mark.
Thank you.
That pretty much wraps it up anyway. We are hour 20 in. Boy, I remember the days when we could get an episode in an hour. We haven't been able to do that for quite some time. This has probably been the shortest one we've had for a while, though. That does it for this week. Next episode is Superfan's choice for a theme. So
I won't be here.
Oh, that's right. So it's just going to be
going
Joe
on vacation.
And me.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's going to be the normal, regular, you know, get a scare.
All right, so the next episode will just be Joe and me, and he just texted me.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, that next episode we're going to do Hereditary. We are going to do a breakdown of our... Joe loves this movie, I love this movie. Mark loves it too, but he's not going to be there. So we will do a little breakdown on Hereditary. So I guess until next time, we will see you next time.
Good night, everybody. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Sorry, passing a kidney stone in. Sometimes it happens. You gotta go. Oh. Oh. God.